Yeah, I'm going to try to summarize what was said and just give some thoughts after that. I didn't get notes on everyone's presentation, but I have most of them. So, so Stephen Light, I actually gave his talk this morning. And it's on adaptive management for natural resources. It's traditionally been used on large ecosystems and not really successful for many reasons. But essentially for agriculture, I believe we need to objectively assess the results of management in a short time frame. And that's why I think this process actually will be more successful in an agricultural setting. And I think we need our changes in our approach to problems in ag to use the adaptive management. And the changes I think we need are to work more with non-traditional partners. We're trying to do that more with the environmental community. I feel very strongly that we need to include the environmental community in on our decision making so that the policies then are not fought at the state and national levels. So I think we also need to use this participatory discuss format more, reduce turnaround time for large data sets, amounts of data that we collect in adaptive management programs need to be turned around quickly so they can be gotten back to the farmers to have discussions. And as I said earlier today, I really think we need an independent third party who's going to handle the data for confidentiality reasons. Sandy Bell, who spoke on adult learning this morning, she made it very clear that adults learn new ideas more likely to adopt or practice if you have a relationship built. Fertilizer dealers certainly know that one well. And the new information fits with what the adult has learned in the past. You usually have to use analogies to reach into new learning with adults. And new information has to conform to a mental model that the farmer and all humans, all adults, carry around. And I know humans themselves, myself included, have great difficulty with change. I've often used a simple example of myself in changing the oil in my car. The manual in my car always says to change it right now at 7,500 miles. Well, my father always told me to do it at 3,000 miles, and I'm up to about 4,500 miles right now. So, but I do also believe that I would probably be at 7,500 miles if there were an adaptive management process that would educate me about oil changes and the benefits of oil changes. Walt Smith talked about in traditional ag, agency personnel implement results of assessments on agency land, but in agriculture, farmers are going to be the ones who are going to implement. So it's a little different approach we're going to have to take. Farmers are the end users of the assessments. Any type of adaptive management program, you're going to have some type of assessment or you don't have adaptive management. And it has to be some type of reliable assessment. So, and the professional conservationist roles changes from an expert to equal participant. Actually, there are some questions for Walt on this, which I thought were very good. Some people take offense at the idea that an expert person who's trained themselves deeply in one topic would be put in an equal level, I guess, with a farmer. But I don't think that should be a problem. I don't have any problem with it. I figure the farmers essentially have, most of the good ones have a PhD in farming. And we ought to recognize the knowledge that they have and use that knowledge. So, Tracy Blackmer gave his usual great presentation on how the Iowa Soybean Association is using adaptive management to make large changes on the nitrogen management landscape in Iowa. And those changes are needed for a successful adaptive management program. The power of data summaries and group learning, I don't think you can minimize that. We have to build an infrastructure to do that if we're going to get the change I think that we need. Because I do believe we need the change if we're going to continue to grow food and have such things as crabs in the Chesapeake Bay. So, and the data from assessments used to create new ideas for future assessments. The idea is we need to have this data to make the future assessments, and it has to be handled confidentially. Susie Friedman, it's been great working with her down the Bay Farms Project. She's been leading the program down there that I'm just a technical advisor on. It's a partner who really wants to work with ag and help improve ag. And it's very clear farmers need to be engaged, fully engaged in the type of program that we have down there, and you also need the environmental groups to work with you. But it's also very clear science needs to be the driver, and economics need to be front and center. When we've gone into the farm community, that's usually the first question, is the economics. You always have to bring up the environmental benefits later. So, and we're definitely going to have to build more flexibility in the nutrient management planning. Chris put that well, that I think we really need to do that in some way. We can't have it quite as rigid, to be honest with you. I don't know how that's going to happen in a regulatory environment, because you talk to lawyers, this type of approach is difficult for them to understand and difficult to get in law. So, and we need to provide incentives for the adaptive management assessments by farmers. I think we need to set an incentive system up so that they will be more attuned and more likely to use this type of process and to have faith and trust in it. Harold talked a lot about the fact that researchers need to provide reliable tools. We're still missing a good number of the tools to handle such variability as caused by rainfall. Now, with the new technology that we have, it looks like there's some scientists like Harold who have the skills to be able to take that information from real-time rainfall data and really help us do a better assessment. So, and there's no question we're going to have to use modeling and ground truthing of the results to reduce the uncertainty in agriculture. And we need the scientists to help us with that. And Chris and all his other authors, although actually, Chris, you did that talk yourself. So, but there are a number of authors on his talk. And improve the 590 Nutrient Management Conservation Practice Standard by incorporating this adaptive management process we've talked about all day into that. And we're still working on that. That's work in progress. And it is a similar process as the 9-step conservation planning tool. Walt brought that out in his talk also. And NRCS is participating in a multi-state, multidisciplinary group that we have, which Chris mentioned that we're going to have a meeting tonight. So we are an official multi-state coordinating committee. And the future of adaptive management, these, I'm switching over just to my thoughts on this. I don't really think we have a choice if we're going to solve the type of problems we have, such as around the Chesapeake Bay that Dave Hansen talked about. We need to make changes in the way that we do our entire programs for education and conservation. And the point source method of research and education is just not going to work, because point source is relatively easy. My brother's an environmental engineer, and he worked for some very large plants back in the 80s when the point sources were really been tightened down. And he was in charge of making those changes at some very large factories. And it was really pretty straightforward when you talked to him. It was real easy. It was a cost estimate. It was easy to obtain. You changed your manufacturing process. You measured at the end of the pipe the benefits. You knew the cost to make that change. It was pretty black and white. It was a very top-down environment. The workers weren't really involved in it. The management and the engineers made the decisions, and the plant was just changed. It's really extremely simple compared to non-point source pollution, where you're working with individuals, humans, adult humans, out on the landscape making their everyday decisions, which affect the pollution in such a place as Chesapeake Bay. So I just don't see that we can regulate away these problems either. I don't ever see us getting to the point where we're going to be able to have a nutrient management policeman out in the farm every time the farmer spreads manure. I just don't envision how that's ever going to happen. So I think we're going to have to move towards another system of education and cooperative or collaborative arrangements with the people who use the land. So adaptive management and adult learning literature is very clear that this type of learning is much more efficient than the traditional learning. I often get questions about, well, that's not very efficient. You're only dealing with, such in the project we have down in Chesapeake Bay, there's 120 farmers that we're dealing with. And Tracy's dealing with, well, maybe 800 farmers or so at most. Oftentimes it's 400 or 500 farmers. 400 or 500 a year, 800 trials. And I don't know how many farmers are on in Iowa right now, but it's got to be up in the tens of thousands, 50, 60,000 probably. 40,000 now, yeah, going down. And so they're only dealing with 400 of them. That's not very efficient. But I would say actually the efficiency for adaptive management, a program like that, per unit of change is actually much better than our traditional programs. So, and the other benefit we can't document very well is the benefits from the farmers who take that information home, those 400 farmers in Iowa, the 120 farmers we have down in Chesapeake Bay, who take that information to their other farmers and it's used. So. And the ill-defined problems like how much nitrogen to supply are not well-suited to the lecture format. That's very clear. Ill-defined problems are ones that we don't have a right answer. We don't have a particular right answer we can give today for any given field. So solutions need to be developed in the context of that farm and field, in the context of the humans that use those farms and field. And adults need direct concrete evidence that those new methods are going to work. That survey that you showed there, Chris, 46% wants some evidence. I think that's actually low. My experience is that sounds low, 46%. I'd put it much higher than that. advantages or provides answers to questions considered important to end users. This gets into the question, what I talked about earlier today about legitimate questions. Unless you have some type of agreement that it's a legitimate question, you're not going to be able to move forward to some type of credible solution to get the social construct that you need to get the credible solution. One other change for discussion, I think, is to need to change the emphasis of research from small plots with many measurements and limited locations to a more targeted question of many locations, fewer measurements, and operate within the targeting just the questions that are most interested on the legitimate problems so that we're developing credible solutions and using our energy on those legitimate problems. And I do think I talked about this morning, we need to use ideas for the farming systems research. When I've used this example in the past about the Green Revolution is a great example. I've often had people tell me, well, you don't want to use that. That was kind of in subsistence level agriculture. It was overseas. It's not something you could easily transfer to America. And I think just the opposite. What we're talking about that the Green Revolution varieties being adopted using farming systems research, and some of those scientists are now in the United States working, such as Chuck Francis out of University of Nebraska. I think we need to look at that process because it was very successful. And don't worry about the fact that it was subsistence level agriculture. They adopted a process which was very successful working with adults. And when I worked with adults, even though they were illiterate in the village that I worked in, it didn't mean they weren't smart. They knew their ecosystem much better than anybody ever knew their ecosystem. So, I think we need to use some of the ideas that we've developed in our Iowa Soybean Association, which Tracy talked about, and in the Bay Farms program that Susie talked about. We're trying to develop how to actually implement these ideas in a large-scale setting. And adaptive management, nutrient management plans. The plan is a field-by-field record and trends. I think we need to change our idea from just a plan to developing trends and objective data. So the nutrient management plan would actually incorporate into it some type of objective data that we'd be able to then have the farmers keep track of, and that would be kind of their report card. And the adaptive management shows that we need to have this type of flexible approach. NMPs in an AM adaptive management world would provide guidelines to farmers and farm advisors rather than hard regulations. So if you applied, so you would no longer be out of violation if you applied 20.1 tons of manure versus 20 tons of manure. As long as you had documented records on the guidelines that have been developed through adaptive management to show how much nutrients you really needed. Because the reality is that you can't even measure 20.1 tons. You can't even measure 20 tons. So I think you need the field-by-field records and trends and objective test results with time really to demonstrate performance rather than just a plan. That's just my thoughts on how I think we should go on nutrient management planning. And that's all I have to say. I want to thank all the speakers for giving excellent presentations. I think we had a tremendous session. I really want to thank Jorge for keeping us on time and doing a really good job moderating. Thanks a lot, Jorge. It was really good. Yeah. And I really appreciate the people also that came from outside. I invited a few people who aren't the traditional people, such as Sandy Bell. Susie, thanks for coming down. So that's all I have. Thanks a lot for attending.
No, wait. I...